Hi everybody, my name is Doug and I'm an alcoholic and this is loud. And I do get loud, so what do you want me to do with this thing? Just like throw it away? Dave will take care of it. Is this being taped like everything else you do? I was just given this. I just spoke at a Delaware convention and they gave me this. So this is really cool. My book is actually falling apart. I came up from Florida. You see the Florida tags outside? That's me. I literally drove up here. It's a new thing I've been doing. I travel a lot, so I thought I'd start driving, and it's pretty cool. I have a house halfway between here and Florida in Charlottesville, Virginia. Come on in. We got people coming on in. I don't want to embarrass you. Come on in. And so I had a great chance of coming up here and visiting with you all, and it's really good to be here. The way I like to do my story is I like to do it through the steps because what it does is it keeps me focused and having severe ADD. That's hard for me to do, so if I could do like one step at a time, and the way it goes. The first step starts off with admitted that we were powerless over alcohol, and our lives have become unmanageable. Now, Chris likes this story about losing an airplane, so if anyone's afraid of flying, I'm a retired airline captain, and I'm going to tell you some stories here. I'm going to try not to mention the name of the airline because the stocks will plummet. But you'd think when I lost an airplane that the unmanageability would have came in, but it didn't. And I kept on drinking, and I kept on drinking. And it says, we admitted we were powerless over alcohol. And I want to make one thing perfectly clear here. I am not powerless over people, places, and things. I'm not. And this is the way I figure that out. People, if I don't like you, I'm not going to hang out with you. Places, if I don't like it, I'm going to leave. I'm going to move. I'm not going to stay there. And the things, I couldn't figure out what that thing was until I got one of those smartphones about 5 years ago. And I'm so technically challenged. And I was just, this doesn't work, and I give it to my IT department, and I just threw it out the window. Okay? So that's the thing. So I didn't need that thing anymore until I went to make a phone call, and I couldn't make a phone call, and I couldn't check my emails, and so the people, places, and things. I'm powerless over alcohol. And what that means to me is that when alcohol comes into my body, and I'm not sure about you, that I get this thing called the phenomenon of craving. The phenomenon of craving comes to me so great that I make it virtually impossible to stop. Okay? So in my profession, in 1995, alcohol testing came in. Not a good thing for me. And being the head of the union at that time in Washington, I was fighting for our pilot rights. What do you mean we can't drink? That's our right! Think about it. How are you going to fight against that? I mean, I did. I fought it because I was so fearful, and I knew I was a dead man walking, and I lost the fight. So January 1st, 1995, alcohol testing came in. Now, we make our schedules a month prior before we fly. Everybody following me so far? I couldn't figure out my schedule because I knew I couldn't go 2 days without drinking. I started shaking too much. Now, I normally thought it was the coffee. I didn't put the alcohol together. So then what happened was, I kind of figured it out. I had the schedule. January 4th was my first trip. I had a 4-day trip. I was based out of Washington, D.C. I had a 4-day trip. And then I had 5 days off, and then backed up with another couple trips. Okay? And I thought I would have a cocktail. Has anyone here ever had a cocktail? So I had a cocktail on the 3rd. And it was just to steady my nerves. Well, let's talk about that phenomenon of craving. The phenomenon of craving came in, which blotted out every paramount importance, and I woke up February 1st. I literally woke up February 1st at 3:25 in the afternoon. And the main reason why I remember that is because I started just going in convulsions, and I looked at the clock. And the clock was blinking, and it was 3:25. Now, this thing could have been off for days. And there was just, you could imagine. See, think of a Stephen King novel, and that was the bedroom on Amelia Island in Florida. And there was feces, and it was bottles, and there was blood, and it was just, I thought I killed somebody. And I rolled over on the bed, and I got this letter, and I saw a letter, and it was from my then wife, who was a flight attendant. We had two little kids, and I was wondering why it was so quiet for days. Well, this letter was dated 3 days prior. I didn't even know they were gone. I had no idea they were gone. And it said that she had taken the children, and that I was a flaming alcoholic like my father. Now, my father died from alcoholism, and he had cirrhosis of the liver and died. My brother died from alcoholism and drug addiction, and he died at the age of 21. So there I am, going through an abortion, looking at a blinking clock, 3:25, February 1st, and this peace came over me like I've never experienced before in my life, ever. And I raised up from the bed, and I don't mean I levitated, I sat up from the bed with this peace, and it said, it's over. Three times, it said it's over. And I had this peace. And I called this telephone number that came into my mind. And it said, blank, blank airlines, employee assistance program. And I was like, ugh, and I hung up and I'm walking around. I'm like, oh my God, what am I going to do? I didn't even know what employee assistance program was, but I knew it wasn't good. And I called it again and hung up. And I called it again, and finally this captain says to me, dude, this is a secure line. Don't hang up because I'm not answering the next time. And so I said, I think I'm an alcoholic. You think? I'm missing January. My kids have been gone. I didn't even know it. There's bottles everywhere. In the airlines, it's almost like the CIA. When you mention the alcohol word or some kind of a problem, they come down and, whoop, and they cut you out. They come down to Florida, and the guy says this. He says, listen, you may never fly again. If you admit you're an alcoholic, you're going to have to give up your license. And that's all I ever was. I was never known as, you know, Doug M. I was always known as, hey, this is my buddy, the airline pilot. This is Doug, the airline pilot. And so it was my identity, which today is so far removed from that. And I said, get out of my office. And I just remember thinking, oh my God, I'm going to die like my father. Oh my God, what am I going to do? And as he was walking out of the room, he said to me, listen, you do not have to live life like this any longer. And I thought the angels were singing to me. And I said, let's go do it. And he brought me down to the chief pilot. And they took all my licenses. They took my life, I thought. And we started on this journey to South Miami Hospital. Now, we're not stupid. You know, in the wintertime, we go to South Miami Hospital next to South Beach to sober up. That's where all the airline pilots go, right? We don't go to Michigan. We go to South Miami. So I'm in South Miami Hospital, and there's this little doctor, and I'm with my then wife, and he says to me, you're an angry little man. And I looked at him, and I said, fuck you, and I grabbed my wife's hand. And I'm walking towards the door, and he didn't even move. And he said to me, if you touch that doorknob, I will make sure you never even fly a kite. So now I'm thinking, this is not a good situation. I didn't sign up for this. I don't want this. And so they send me to the room. They peel off the wife. This big guy comes in. He says, get to your knees. And I said, whoa, 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 whoa. Everybody's really got to slow down here. I just got off an airplane. You know, let's discuss this a little bit. And they said, he said, get to your knees. I said, I don't believe in a God. He said, oh, okay, that's cool. And I was like, wow, that was easy. He says, just pack up your bags. Come with me. And I was like, wow, that's cool. Just be atheist and you get out of this loony bin. And he walks me right to the elevator. He pushes it. He says, get on, get out. I said, whoa, whoa, whoa. Why is everyone trying to throw me out here? Let's relax. You know, if I don't pass this, whatever, I don't fly a kite. I mean, what else could I do? And he says, get to your knees. And I got to my knees and the prayer said something like, you know, F you, God, you son of a being. Right? And I have not missed a day since, 14 years. My sobriety date is February 1st, 1995. I've never missed a day. I don't know why, but I just haven't. I've been on my knees in the morning and in the evening. I left there, and I did not want to leave. Now, it was a 28-day program, and they loved me so much they kept me for 72 days. Now, when people laugh, that's what I think. My ego's not going to say that I was sicker than everybody else. So they kept me in there for 72 days, and I left. I went back to this little island, and as I was coming up on 90 days sober, the only thing I was hearing was, don't drink, go to meetings, this is a selfish program. I'm like, dude, sign me up. I'm in. Selfish program, neon lights coming right at me. It's all about me, baby. Right? And so I was not drinking, I was going to meetings, I was not drinking, I was going to meetings, I was not drinking, you know, I was not drinking. And at the 90th day, I was picking up this little trinket, door prize, gift, whatever. It was a collar. green, let's say a green trinket. You know, it's like you know, giving a prize to a cowboy who has hemorrhoids for not rioting. You know what I mean? One year. So anyway, I'm going to my door prize because 90 days. If I went 90 days, man, I'm in. I am totally in, right? I'm totally in. And I get the green chip, and I'm going out to Four Point Liquors. It's called Four Point Liquors. And it's on Amelia Island, and it's a drive-through liquor store. That's right, folks. We have drive-through liquor stores in Florida. Beat that. So when you're too drunk to get out of the car, I'm driving up to the side. The whole left side of my car was destroyed. There comes Dougie. I'd be like in full uniform. Hey, Susie! You know, the gallon of vodka would come out. I'd have my kids in the back. I do try to get out. Oh, here you go, another gallon. And so I was going, and I was going, and as I'm running out the door, this guy from Hoboken, New Jersey, steps in front of me, and he says, "Listen, I need to talk to you for a second." He says, "You're acting a little more weird than usual." He says, "So if you're ready to go out," he says, "make sure that you don't tell anybody that AA failed, because you have not worked the program of recovery." I said to him, "Who the hell do you think you are? Because all these guys are coming over my house and taking me to loony bins and taking me to jails and institutions. I'm going to 3 meetings a day. This is all I do." He goes, No. Let me phrase it. "You are the mayor of the meetings and the fellowship. You have not worked the program of recovery. So let's make sure one thing's perfectly correct. There's meetings, right? And then there's a program, the 12 steps, the big book of Alcoholics Anonymous of recovery, which is this. Okay?" And he says, "If you want to, you can come over to my house on Tuesdays and Thursdays." He says, and I know you're not employed or employable right now. He says, "I want you to bring this book. If you're late, 1 minute, don't show up. You lie to me once, it's over." And I was like, "Or you can just go out, whatever you want to do." And I left, and I got in that car, and I was driving to the Four Point Liquors, or Five Point Liquor, whatever the name of it was. And I was at the stop sign of Sadler Road and 8th Street, and I'm looking at it, and my car turned left. And I didn't go. And I said, "I'll give this SOB. I'll show him that I'm different. I know none of you have ever done this before. I'll show that guy I'm different." And before you know it, he started showing me the solution. He started showing me the solution. Admitted we were powerless over alcohol. He says, "You are not going to give your power away. You are not powerless over people, places, and things." Because it talks about in the big book that we have unlimited power, that we have tapped into this resource which we call a God. I said, whoa. You mentioned the God word. Listen, if there's an atheist part of this program, I'm your man. I said, "But this God thing's not going to work for me." He goes, "Well, then you're hosed." And he would use that, "Then you're hosed." I'm like, "Well, what's the wait? Everyone's always trying to throw me out." I said, "There's got to be a door number two." He says, "No. It's really find God or die." He says, "But we're going over step number one." He's going over step number one. He says, "And so you have, at the 12th step, saying you haven't had a spiritual awakening as the singular result of these steps. So of course you're not going to have a spiritual awakening." And he used to call me genius. He'd always end up with genius. I'm actually a rocket scientist. I'm an aerospace engineer by education. That's how you do it. People in the bar, "What do you think, you're a rocket scientist?" "Actually." "Yeah." I think that was what they thought of me. So like, "Well, yeah." And so he called me genius. He taught me about the phenomenon of craving. As you can tell, my big book's all over the place. He started talking to me about the phenomenon of craving. And the phenomenon of craving was very important to me because I always thought that I was a loser. I had no idea that I had this thing called the phenomenon of craving. I just thought, how do I accomplish all this stuff? Captain of an airliner at the age of 26. How do I do all this stuff? And I can't stop this. I can't stop. It was a losing battle. Well, he started teaching me about this. He said, because this book is the basic text of our society. So what is a textbook? If I was to give Chris my 737 flight manual, it would have been ugly. But let's just use Chris as an example, since he's my friend. If I was to give Chris my 737 flight manual and say, hey, Chris, read this, come back, tell me what you think. How many sponsors have done that? You're killing people. Well, okay, I was in the nut house. I had this guy that came in and talked about AA. I came up to him, and I liked him. And he said, read this book and tell me what you think. I did. I had nothing else to do. I'm in a nut house. And I just got released from the padded part of the nut house. And I read it, and I called him up, and I said, well, you know, the book's written very poorly, and that guy Bill is a loser. He's just reading it again. Okay? I called him up the next night. Bill's still a loser, and it's still written poorly. What am I trying to get here? He didn't know the big book. It's a textbook. What's a textbook? A textbook needs to be taught. It says here, we of Alcoholics Anonymous are more than 100 men and women who have recovered. I have recovered. I am not this recovering alcoholic. Now, there's conditions on my recovery. There's a difference between recovered and cured. We all agree on that? We're not cured. Why? Just add alcohol, I'm off to the races. Right? But I'm a recovered alcoholic. Symptoms are no longer in me. Right? The disease is still in me, but the symptoms are gone. As long as I do, as I'll tell you how I do it on a daily basis, and I do work the steps on a daily basis, to show other alcoholics precisely exactly how we have recovered is the main purpose of this book. So when I read that, I'm like, I looked at him, and I said, so why are all these people keep on talking about their own program? And he goes, you are a genius. He goes, I don't know. Why? I said, why isn't everybody working this? See, you got to understand. I'd have a first officer. He would say something. I'd respond. Say, respond. Monkeys could fly airplanes. Say, respond. Say, respond. As long as he read the checklist and I responded appropriately, it was fine. But, you know, on the fourth day, when you haven't drinking in a day, and you're trying to rush, and you go, don't worry, I got to just get the blah, 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 and you're at the end of the runway, and you push the throttles, and you go, and you forget to put the flaps down, not a good thing. So you get the flaps down, you throw it, right? Just like AA. Just like AA. Folks, we have a circle and a triangle. It used to be in our book. They took it out, and that's a whole story itself. Recovery, unity, and service. Recovery, the 12 steps. I'll show you exactly how I work them nightly. Unity, the meetings. I make, two, three a week. And then I travel the world, speaking, or drive up to Bernardsville. Okay? And then, what do I do with AA? What do I do for AA? Service work. I have a home group. It's in Charlottesville, Virginia. It's the best group in the world, besides this, of course. But the group was started just like this group. Just like I started one in Bernardino Beach and one in Sarasota, all after you. Everything I've done comes from Chris and Bernardsville group. Yeah. So I had the first step down. But when he showed me this, and this will freak people out, and I'm reading from the big book, and it says here, this seemed to prove that one alcoholic could affect another as no non-alcoholic could. It also indicated that strenuous work, driving up from Jacksonville, Florida, to speak here on a Tuesday night, one alcoholic with another, was vital to permanent recovery. How could we never mention permanent recovery? Never, right? Hi, my name's Doug. I'm permanently recovered. I'll never drink again. Oh my God, forget about it. How would that meeting go? The meeting would just be all about me. And I wouldn't mind that. But no one talks about permanent recovery. It mentions it twice in this book. Permanent recovery. This book is full of all great stuff. So, now we go through this guy's Bill story. The Bill, the loser guy. And we go through this loser guy Bill's book. And he says, this is what I want you to do. F-T, if you felt, drank. Let me back up. I got it. If you felt, thought, or drank. Like anything in the paragraph, I want you to put a F-T or D. When we were done reading that, every paragraph had either an F, a T, or a D. I felt, I sank, or I drank, like Bill Wilson. So what happened to me? He just identified me in with this loser. So now I didn't think he was such a bad guy, and he really wasn't that bad of a loser. Right? Because that would make me a loser. So then when we moved by Bill's story, the great part, what we did, is we kept on going through the book, and he would do it nonstop, and it would go page by page, and he came up with this thing called, There Is a Solution. Imagine that. There's a solution. There's a solution to our alcoholism. And it states this. Nearly all have recovered. They have solved the drink problem. Go into a meeting, Raise your hand. Hi, my name is Doug. I'm an alcoholic. I've solved my drink problem. What do you think that meeting would be like? It would be ballistic. It would be all about me again. So you got to be careful of that. But the biggest thing I want everyone to know, and this is what sponsors are doing to sponsees who don't know the program of recovery. It says here, we, the first 100 people of Alcoholics Anonymous, feel that the elimination of drinking is but a beginning. That's all it is. So when someone tells you don't drink, go to meetings, oh my God, what do you mean don't drink and go to meetings? And what happened was we have been infiltrated by hard drinkers, people who could stop or moderate. I could not stop or moderate. So that means I'm a real alcoholic. I need a message of weight and death, like the big book says. And when I didn't get that, when I just didn't drink and go to meetings, I was about ready to go out, just like everybody else. It's in, out, in, out, in, out. And then finally, this guy that used to wash my car in Fernandina Beach, 21 years old, could not get sober, walked downstairs in front of his roommates, also in recovery, had a shotgun, put it right through his head, 3 weeks ago, blew it off. You know, we're killing people out there. And we got to stop killing people. It's all about the message here. If the message doesn't have weight and depth, we are not going to listen to anybody. The steps, I could bring you through like Dr. Bob did, through the steps in 5 hours. People are like, oh, are you rushing through it? Yeah, well, how about if we just do nothing? That'll work. Think about it. That's what Dr. Bob believed. Get them through. And then the 10th step, as I will show you tonight, the 10th step will continually work on your inventory. My email is dmuir01@gmail.com. And I will send you, I get emails from all over the world asking for the package that I've come up with, I have a big book of Alcoholics Anonymous. Then what happens is you have something called More About Alcoholism, Chapter 3. More About Alcoholism. It's the state of mind before we go off on a relapse. It's that state of mind with that guy sitting in a bar thinking, I'll just have a little whiskey in my mouth. That'll work. And we think, yeah, that's cool. You know what I mean? That's cool. You know, my wife, non-alcoholic, she was sitting in a meeting. The first time she heard me talk, my wife is adorable. She's from Rome, Italy, right off the boat, type of Rome, Italy. And so I talk about that I had 4 DWIs. 4 DWIs. I'm an airline pilot. 4 DWIs. Right? Is that just insane? So anyway, I'll tell you a couple stories on that one. But so I get 4 DWIs, and I said, I know what the problem is. I know what it is. I stopped driving. I moved to Hoboken. I'd have a cab driver pick me up, bring me to Newark. I'd hop on a jump seat. I'd fly down to Washington. I'd do my trip. I'd fly back to Newark. The cab drivers would fight over me. I would tip them fat. They'd come with a bottle of alcohol, and I'd go to my girlfriend's place, and right? So everybody understood. Their heads were shaking. Yeah, I would have quit driving too. Sure, that's not a problem. Not quit drinking. And she was like, I couldn't believe it. I'm looking around, and I was like, they understood it. She still doesn't understand it to this day. I quit driving. So that's what I did. That was my solution. That is the insanity that we're talking about here. It says in step one, we had to fully concede to our innermost self. Fully concede to our innermost self. No one else, our innermost self. When I did that February 1st, 3:25 in the afternoon, I never drank again. But, contingent on, was working the steps of Alcoholics Anonymous to the best of my ability and continuing to do it and then passing it on. For those of you who have worked the steps and have not sponsored anybody, shame on you. And I'm going to say this because I called up my sponsor and I said, when I was in Charlottesville, Virginia, I said, oh my God, I'm going to kill this guy. He says, genius, you are not that powerful. And he's right. I could tell these guys were right. They believe it. But I wasn't going to kill him. I just brought him through the highlighted area of all this stuff that I have in my big book, Alcoholics Anonymous. From there, it talks about we agnostics. We agnostics is step two, period. So all of a sudden, my my sponsor says to me, he says, we need to ask ourselves one short question. Do I now believe or am I willing to believe that there is a power greater than myself? And I said, no.
He says, well, then you're homeless. And he pack up the book and leave. I'm like, well, wait a second. Well, what about door two? There's got to be people like me who came in here before. And there are. And there are. There are people like me. Lots of people like me that came here before. He says, okay, would you do this? Would you come to believe that your last 92 days of sobriety has been helped by the rooms of Alcoholics Anonymous? I said, absolutely. I could do that. And so we moved forward. You know, I thought I had to be like, you know, looking around for a burning bush. You know, like, where's the spiritual awakening? Right? I didn't need that. He said, move forward. And then we came up with the third step. And he got on his knees in my house. And I got so embarrassed, I turned red. I said, what are you doing? Get up! My two-year-olds are walking around. You know, they're all on their knees, and they're always on their back. He goes, weren't you the guy who shit your pants in a bar and walked back the next day? This is embarrassing you? I was like, you know, this guy's got a point. Actually, I did. And pissed in my pants at the same time. Bonus. So he said to me, he says, get to your knees. I said, I can't do that. He says, all right. He says, then you're host. I said, are we going back to that again? He says, do me a favor. Will you make a decision right now to finish the rest of the steps? And I said, yeah, I'll do that. I could do that, right? No praying, no meditating, stuff. So I did. I did. And I moved forward, and I moved forward, and I wrote a four-step. And that four-step was 22 pages, and you know what I remember? The thing. We all have the thing. If you don't think you have the thing, you're lying to yourself, we have the thing. The thing we're going to tell nobody. So when I walked into his house, and he opened up the book of Alcoholics Anonymous on how it works, and he went to the fifth step, and at that fifth step, he looked at me, and he said 9 times, and it reads it right here, and I can go through it, but we're time constrained. And the fifth step, 5 times, are you sure you told me everything? Are you positive? Are you eliminating every twist of character? And he went through each one, and then he'd look up, and he'd look at me, are you sure you're not forgetting something? And he was looking into my soul, and I did. I left out the Tennessee thing. I left it out. I wasn't going to tell him. I didn't even write it down. There was no way I was going to tell this freaking maniac. And so at the end, he said one more time, and he looked at me, and he says, I'm going to tell you, genius, once we have taken this step, withholding nothing, I won't ask you again, are you withholding anything? And I was like, yes, I do. Any boy in Knoxville, Tennessee, girl. And then I looked at him, I'm like, oh my God, he's going to think I'm a freak. Right? And he says, dude, that ain't nothing. And he told me his thing, and I'm like, oh, you're sick. Right? Now, you wouldn't get that telling it to a priest, would you? He would have thrown my ass out if I would have told him my thing. And there was a way that I made amends for that thing. I made amends, and I'll tell you all about that, okay? There's a way of making amends for everything. I have made 100 complete amends. I made amends to the state of New Jersey. Check that one out. That was a scary one. So now we're on 6 and 7. Two little paragraphs. He gives me a sheet with over 68 character defects, which is in my package now. And he says, I want you to fill this out. I said, cool, I'll fill it out. And then I want your wife to fill out one. That's what I said. Oh, no. And so she's like, I got this. And she's ripping it through the paper, right? And we went back and we went over the character defects. And there was so much stuff there that I saw that I really hated. I despised myself. I hated myself. I hated myself. But you know, when I went home after the fifth step and sat quiet for 1 hour, now folks, I got ADD, it could have been 30 seconds, it seemed like a lifetime. But when I sat still for the first time, I felt a part of you. I didn't find God. I was still looking under the bed. But I felt a part of you. Follow me? Then I did 6 and 7 with him. And then, I got the phone call. The airline called me up and said, so-and-so Muir, you have been reinstated by the FAA, and we have a position for you. You'll be based out of Washington again. You need to go to so-and-so place where my simulator was, if I tell you, you'll know the airline. And, oh, by the way, your number is up. Would you like to upgrade to captain? I swear to God, it all happened that fast. And I'm standing there like, Hello? She thought I was like pegging. And I couldn't believe it. You know? I tear up now thinking about it. And I did. I did it. And I upgraded to captain and I moved to Washington. And I can't tell you what my life was like. It was just absolutely unbelievable. Unbelievable. And then my sponsor said, this will happen. I moved to Charlottesville, Virginia. My then wife picked me up at the airport with the two kids. And she says, I no longer love you. I want a divorce. I'm having an affair. Yeah. And I'm like, on my 1 year sobriety date, February 1st, 1996. Happy anniversary. So I said to her, so now I'm here. And I heard, what do you want to do? And I just like, there's the men's group meeting at 7:30. She's like, F-A-A-W-7, get those drunks out of my house. They stink anywhere. One might have puked in my bed. Because I used to bring home drunks and detox them. Because that's what Bill Wilson used to do. I followed this, folks, by the letter. By the letter. And I went through that. And I went through it. And I moved to Charlottesville. And I ran into another big book thumper. And he brought me 8 and 9. And I'll tell you what, I hosed a lot of people. I was a thief. I was a liar. You may not believe that, but I was a thief. I used to break into houses in New Jersey. And then he would make me go make amends to these people, direct amends. And I have an airline pass. I can make direct amends in Hong Kong. Tell me that didn't suck. I was going to rat him out to GSO. He's picking on me. Right? So I get on this airplane, you know, because I used to break into people's houses in my neighborhood. And so, you know, it says in the big book, in the ninth step, if we have a difficult amends that we have to make, we make sure that we check with God, we pray about it, we check with a sponsor. Okay, it doesn't use the word sponsor in the book. We used to be called sharing partners. There was no sponsor. They did not want hierarchy. They wanted sharing partners. Okay, but what happened was, it says here, before taking drastic actions, we might implicate others, we secure their consent. So I'm like, bink! Mom, still is in the neighborhood, we'll rock on. I don't want to hurt her name. So I put on this suit and tie with a gig I had going on. I wore a suit and tie to every amend. It was the gray suit, the white shirt, the red tie. I would have worn my uniform with the hat. And I went to my mother, my sisters were there, and I said, I used to steal money from everybody in the neighborhood, and then blah, 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 blah. She was like, oh my God! And I was like, I'm not going to hurt the family name. Not me. I'm with you. If you don't want me to do it, I'm not going to. And then she said, well, what will happen if you go do this? And she's like, you little old mom. And my sisters were there. And I said, well, supposedly I'll stay sober forever. And they're like, oh, okay, yeah, no, that's fine. Go ahead. And I'm like, so I'm sitting there with a bunch of Christian cards, except for the Bronsteins. I had the Jewish card. And I had money stacked in there. Anyway, I went around the whole neighborhood all day. And they would welcome me in, and then they would kick me out, and then they would pull me back, and then they would tell their kids, oh, smokes, it was terrible. So I went back to Washington. I am not going back to this. And vomit on my sponsor, and he said, so where are you going next week? I said, Michigan. And then I did it. And I saved the worst one for last. I had, I don't know how many bench warrants out for my arrest in the state of New Jersey. I had a lot. I surrendered myself to the state trooper's place many, many years ago. And I walked in, and I called up the airlines. I said, I'm going to go away for a while. And I'm like, yeah. And they said, all right, you know, whatever. And my mother dropped me off, and I was ready to go away. I was ready to do it. You know why? Because I couldn't look behind my back anymore. I couldn't. It was all over. It was done. And if I was going to do this gig, I was going to do it. I was going to do it forever. And I walked in, and there was this nasty-ass sergeant. And he goes, wow. And I'm looking for my picture. I said, I'm Doug Muir. And how may I help you, Doug Muir? I'm like, dude, you know who I am? I'm Doug Muir. So anyway, he didn't. And he looked up on the computer or whatever they had back then in the 90s and, Mr. Muir, come with me. And he puts handcuffs, and he brings me in the back, and then this guy comes out, this young man, and he says he was some kind of an attorney, district something, something, something. And he's like, what are you doing here? Do you have any idea the paperwork that you caused me? I'm like, dude, I'm in handcuffs. You think I care? And he goes, seriously, why are you doing this? And right out of the paper, I read it to him. Well, I had it memorized. I said, I may not overcome drinking. I may not overcome drinking. And I believe that with all my heart. I've seen you guys come in and out and in and out and in and out and in and out, and it makes me sick. It really does. You don't have to do it anymore. The freedom that I got when that guy came in, he says, I have never dealt with this before. You're going to have to give me a little time. And I'm sitting there handcuffed to a chair. And I said, I'm not moving. And he came back in, and it seemed like 90 hours, ADD, could have been 30 seconds. And he had a piece of paper, and he slid it across the table, and it had 6 digits on it. And he says, this is what we feel you owe us. What did he say in the big book? We make the best deal we can. So I said to him, can we do this? I'm going to pay you $250 a month the first few months. And here's my contract. This is what I will be making. But as you know, maybe you don't know, I've like destroyed my financial career. I was the only guy buying girls drinks when ladies drink free. Type of guy. Genius. And so, and I said, $500 after that, and then I'd upgrade it to $1,000. And I had it on a 7-year scale. And he looked at me, and he was flabbergasted, and he says, do you understand you're in handcuffs? Are you negotiating? And I'm like, I'm just being realistic. I'm being realistic. You know, I made my last payment. It was June 2nd, 2002. Yeah. And that was huge. I made all amends. I paid off everything. I paid back everybody. I did everything. And so what happened was the girl from Tennessee, it was a bar. It was drunk. No did not mean no to me, you know. And it was with a bunch of guys, and it just wasn't pretty. And so I had to take care of that. And I found a house that took care of abused women in Charlottesville, in Virginia. And I volunteered. And I had about 6 months in, and it was amazing what the women went through, guys. It was just totally amazing. It blew me away. And I sat there, and time after time, I was just their sounding board. And I listened to them, and just knowing what I did, it was crushing me. And then all of a sudden, things started turning where I felt for them. And then they found out who I was. And I started something in Charlottesville. It put me into the media pretty fast. Good stuff that I started. And the lady called me into the room, and she says, you're that guy on TV. And I'm like, yeah. And she says, why are you here? And I told her. And you know, she said, we forgive you. So that's how I took care of that. So now we're back in the police station. And he agreed, the attorney. And I signed the document, and I left. And I'm standing outside. And I didn't have a cell phone back then. And I'm like, I had my little bag, like I was going to have a rolling suitcase, you know. I'm going to jail! And I did it. And so I walked back in, and the guy goes, the nasty sergeant goes, you in? And so I need a phone. And my mother picked me up. And she says, what do you want? And I said, can you drop me off at the airport? Now, Union Airlines can fly in other Union Airlines for free. We got a jump seat, a cockpit seat. And so I showed my ID, and they let me on. And we always give each other first class, of course. I'm sitting in first class. And until that point, I was atheist. And at that point, it hit me like a bolt of lightning. I had no more fear. I owed no one amends. I was equal with the universe. And if you don't know what that feeling's like, you have to try it. And this overwhelming God consciousness came over me, and I just started crying. So I'm in first class. The captain up there knows that I'm an airline pilot. The flight attendant comes back. She's patting me on the head. The old lady next to me, are you okay? I'm like, oh my God. You know what I mean? And I just had this, I just wanted God. I wanted God. And from that point forward, I read every book. I mean, not Mormons, the Jehovah's Witnesses would knock on the door. I'm like, come on in. They'd be like, come on! The 2 hours later, you know, I'm all jacked up with my Bible, like, whoa, you changed the word and that's ballsy. And they're like, can we come? They're leaving my house. No, stay! More coffee! That ninth step changed my life. That ninth step changed my life. You have to complete the ninth step, folks. You have to complete the ninth step. 10, 11, and 12 have kept me in 1 through 9. 10, 11, and 12 have kept me 1 through 9. And this is the way it works for me. We talked about the circle and the triangle. Recovery, unity, and service. Recovery, the 12 steps. Unity, the meeting. Service work is AA. What am I doing for AA? Follow me so far? This is what I do on a daily basis. I wake up in the morning with my wife. If we're in the same state together, travel a lot. I'm no longer an airline pilot, by the way. I retired in 2004, and I do what I love. Now, I haven't really figured out what I do, but I know I do pretty good at it. But I love what I do. And so we get up in the morning, she showers, I shower, and we have this beautiful meditation place in our home in Florida, and in Charlottesville, Virginia, whichever home we're at. And she'll read her Al-Anon book. I'll read a non-denominational called Science of the Mind, more Buddhism. And then I'll read the 24-hour book, and we go into contemplation. And I set my alarm because, you know, with ADD, when I first started, and it started off with 60 seconds, I'd be like, 30 seconds. So someone said, yeah, you should set an alarm. You don't have to open your eyes. When it goes off, you know you're done. So I'm at 20 minutes. And then we wake up, we talk about it. Really cool. If you haven't done this with your mate, you've got to try it. I look at my 10-step form that I filled out the night before. Now you guys are like, dude, you got to get a life. I have the most unbelievable life in the world. I have a life today that I could... My sponsor asked me, what do you want from me? And I said to him, I just want to fill up that hole. Does everybody understand that hole? That hole that only alcohol, sex, drugs, and rock and roll could fill? That's all I wanted to fill. I don't even have a little pinpoint of a hole anymore. I have a life that so far exceeds everything that I ever desired. I just wanted to fill up that hole. Okay? Wait to the journey. But you have to do this stuff. You do. You have to. I'm not even going to say, well, it's suggested to. Whatever. I just do that. Hand signals. And so, you know, and before I go to bed, I get to my knees, Catholic thing, I can stand on my head, spit wooden nickels, it doesn't matter. And I fill out the 10-step form that I made up, that I have, and I write down, it's right out of page 86, when I retire at night. I wake up in the morning, my wife and I pray and meditate, we open up our cell phones, we look at the 24 hours ahead, yeah, we're techies, that's right. And then we go on throughout our day. I do this every day. 99% of the time. Rarely do I miss. Rarely do I miss. 14 years later, rarely do I miss. Then, I resolutely look where I could help another alcoholic, whether it be traveling to a large convention and talking, whether it's in my house in Florida on Saturdays from 10 to 2, I will sit there and I will wait for someone to come in, and people in Jacksonville and Amelia Island know that they can come there and they can go through the steps with me. And we'll do it in 4 hours and we'll knock it out. And they'll have a path and a vision when they're done. If no one shows up, my wife and I go out, we hang out, we go to the beach, we'll do whatever. But we sit there. If a woman comes in and she feels uncomfortable telling me her fifth step, then I give her off to my wife. Because in the pink book, it talks about Dr. Bob and how he helped 5,000 men and women to recovery. So I help women too. And if they feel uncomfortable with the fifth with me, I give them off to my wife. So we tag team on this. All right. This stuff is my life, but it's a small portion of my life. But it's everything in my life. I know that doesn't make sense. Okay? Today, everything that I have designed in my life, all the success, whether it's monetary, whether it's business success, whether it's family success, all came through my visualization, designing it in my life, and believing that the universe is going to provide it for me. I mean, just absolutely believing in it. I got a train station. What? Chris, 88. Chris came down and saw my nightclub restaurant. I'm in a nightclub restaurant. I'm an alcoholic, and it's the largest one too. And I got this train station. I took a picture of it. It was a crack house, and I hung it up. And I said, "There'll be a nightclub restaurant in there, and I will employ so many people, and we'll be the only people that have medical, and they'll love me." And it happens. And it happened. We opened up 2001, February 1st, and it rocks, and it's great. And I'm the only one that gives medical to everybody, and it's a great place to work. It's just a great place to work. And now I have, you know, multiple international and national companies with 3,000 employees. And unbelievable. Unbelievable. I love them. They love me. Maybe not, whatever. But we treat each other with respect. It's fun. We have a great time. You know, one of my biggest players in one of my companies, her husband's here today. When she comes down, she's in recovery. And we sit there and we pray and we meditate and we talk about God. And it's just so cool. It's so cool to have her as my right-hand person. I mean, she's just absolutely, absolutely phenomenal. I can't explain to you how the big book of Alcoholics Anonymous has changed my life. Really. There's many tapes out there. But you'll see mine on the internet, Doug M., about how to take people through the steps in 5 hours, 4 hours, however you want to do it. I could do it in whatever. The time doesn't matter. It's getting, you know, when I did that 22-page fifth step, the only thing I remember was Tennessee. That's it. I don't remember. Susie Lou didn't let me touch a private part when I was five. Who cares? You know what I mean? It's what I did and what I cannot sleep with that I got out that changed my life. Now, I'm not sure how all this works, but you have a Q&A, correct? Is that correct? Yeah? I call you ma'am because I've been down south for 30 years, and I apologize for that. But, my name is Doug M., and it's been a pleasure talking to you.